all these moments of...
Oh, guess what? I wasn't recording that.
That's okay, time. Good. It wasn't that great.
All right, so...
That's stupid punk rock. I don't, you know, I just think of it as rock and roll, because that's what it is.
Alright, this is Stan with the Punk Rock Chronicles. We're actually at the Punk Rock Museum today. This is our, I think we've been planning to come out here for about 3 or 4 months for this specific date. And then when we heard that there was some really cool photo exhibit with some awesome photographers, we had the opportunity to do this interview. So my name is Stan. I've got Bob the Bastard here.
Hey.
This is the 1 year anniversary of the Punk Rock Museum. And we were invited to come down to do this podcast, like I mentioned, just because we've been a huge supporter of this museum. We first interviewed, a year before it opened, we interviewed some of the folks involved, and we've awesome. Been tracking it. Yeah, just we've been getting a ton of social media discussions, you know, and everything's been really positive as of last year, so... we're super, super stoked, and then the Vandals are playing tonight, so that's even better. Let me just kind of get into this. So we are at the one-shot photo exhibit, and it highlights female photographers, and we've got three awesome photographers with us right now. We have OG Viamontes.
Yes, hi.
And then we have Courtney Coles.
Hello.
And then we have the representative of Naomi Peterson, her brother.
Chris Peterson's
here.
On behalf of my sister.
Well, I'm looking around this room, and you know, you'll have to see this on our YouTube channel, because honestly, this is amazing, amazing photography from different eras. And so I just wanted to kind of jump into this, and I want to start with OG, because I'm looking at her photos, and hers is more of a current day photography of stuff going on. Can you kind of describe like what inspires you with your photography and how you even got into it?
Well, I've just always been really passionate about the visual arts, and something about preserving time was something I was really always fascinated with. So, you know, I always had a thing for it, but it wasn't up until about 3.5 years ago is when I really just decided to go, fuck it. You know, let's just do it. Let me try it. I was at a DIY show that I did not expect to be what it was. And I saw something happening during the post-pandemic times in Los Angeles. And, like, nobody wanted to be next to each other during that time. You know, people were still masked up. And so... I just saw these backyard shows just explode in the most illegal, most fucking just random places. And I mean, if you even went just one time, like, how could you not want to keep coming? And I loved how everyone just came and formed together and just said, fuck it, let's have a show. I mean, you had kids showing up with generators. You know, you're waiting about an hour and a half for the show to start, and then finally it comes, and then the cops fucking pull up, you know? And I just saw it through the midst of all the chaos, all these people just formed together, and it was a community, and I fell in love with it. I fell in love with it, and it just inspired me to just go out there and preserve that summer, which I thought was... it was just going to be that, you know, and then it just became what it is today, and here I am, so.
That's awesome. That's amazing. I mean, so I'm looking at that photo. It's on 6th Street, right?
Yes.
And that's a generator show, correct?
Yes, actually, it was a U-Haul that pulled up with a, a stage, and all the equipment, all the back line was in the U-Haul. They rented a U-Haul and just pulled up and played out of it, and I was on top of it.
And for folks, this is like downtown Los Angeles, right? So it's kind of a gnarly area.
Yeah. So this particular spot isn't going to be what it looks like right here. It's going to be completely gentrified, and it's going to turn into a park. And the first spot got burned, you know, so then within a matter of minutes, just the spread of the news on Instagram was that quick. It was all this is what you see is everyone just finally showing up. And it was just a matter of like 10 minutes. And the cops were already waiting at the border, waiting. And so they waited till the sun came down. And that's when they started coming in, and it was just chaos. So
was there a riot? Was there like riot gear? And were they clubbing people?
There's always riot gear. Yeah. The one off the 110 freeway, they were shooting rubber bullets into the crowd. And it just, I don't know, a little excessive. Even though there's a fire pit and a band playing, like, it's not like we're all holding machine guns. Like, they're just straight out shooting rubber bullets to clear you out of the area. And so I saw a kid get shot with a rubber bullet in his face, and he was bleeding right behind the stage. And they were just saying, get the fuck out. Like, they were clearing out the whole area. So, but I was hiding behind a rock, too. There's some images I have where the kids were throwing fireworks at the cops. So
that's crazy. So, yeah, I mean, you know, us growing up younger, too, like when we were younger kids, right? And we get in these situations as well with cops and riot gear and getting clubbed and all that. And it's interesting that, you know, obviously that still happens. But, yeah, so you're saying that show only lasted 10 minutes?
It was actually maybe an hour.
Oh, an hour. Okay.
An hour. But, like, this is right when the sun was going down. And this is when the crowd just started forming, and Dead City Punks just started jamming because the cops were already in the area just waiting. So might as well just do it now and get it done. A lot of great bands like Mard and Death Gang played as well. And so everyone got to play a very short set.
It's amazing, like, certain areas breed a certain type of mentality, and that's a very resilient scene you have there.
Yeah.
You know, rubber bullets, riot gear, cops. Every weekend there's a hassle. Yeah. And every weekend you pop back up somewhere else and you get it going.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so it's a testament to, you know, the will of the people and what people want to hear and what they want to do and creativity.
Yeah.
You know, it's awesome.
Yeah.
That's rad. So, Courtney, can you talk about your photos, kind of the era and what you are capturing with yours, and then also give us a little bit of background of, like, how you came into photography?
Yes. So my name is Courtney. I'm, like, waving everywhere. I'm from Sylmar, California, which is in the San Fernando Valley. I've been doing photography, I guess, like, officially since my early teens, but have had an interest with just cameras since I was a kid. My mom had a bunch of photo albums, and I was like, wow, I want photos like this for myself. And so every year for the last year of school or field trips, I'd ask for a disposable camera to take, you know, photograph the field trips. And I think that grew from, you know, being the annoying, like, mom, can I have a camera, to me taking her Polaroids and making Polaroids of our chickens and all that. And my mom, of course, getting upset I'm wasting film on, like, birds. And with music, I have lovingly, but also I'm seriously saying that I grew up on MTV and, like, Fuse and VH1, and, like, watching artists and musicians on TV going, like, wow, I fucking love this, and I love photography. Like, how can I, like, make them kiss? And so I took my disposable camera to a show. I saw Taking Back Sunday for the first time, also my first live band, at the Tower Records in Sunset, and couldn't understand or didn't understand the concept of using a flash indoors. So I took a bunch of photographs with my disposable camera, and, like, yeah, I got all these photos of the band, got them developed, and I was like, there is nothing to be seen here, but, like, the memory of being in there and, like, being one of the few people with the camera of some sort, I was like, this is awesome. Like, I want to do this. And so I got a little bit older, and I had to pick and choose what shows to go to, because my mom was like, I'm not taking you to all these shows. So I had to pick and choose which ones were enough for me to go, I can wake up at 6 o'clock, you know, to go to school if I get home at, like, 1. And it wasn't until I was, like, 18, 19, I went to Pierce College. It was a community college in the Valley. And we were working on the magazine, so it's called The Bull. And we had to have local stories about something. So I was like, well, I want to go to shows more. And if I chose the Cobalt, which is a local venue, I can be there all the time for school. And so I was like, I'll just do the Cobalt. And then my editor was asking, you know, what about the Cobalt? And I said, well, there's a really cool punk and hardcore scene in, like, the Valley. I really want to document that and whatever. Me, like, really any excuse to be at shows. And so I made a bunch of photographs. Like, there's a backstage of the Cobalt, and then the kid next, his name is Corey. So I chose one random hardcore kid to, like, photograph, and went to a bunch of shows with him and just, like, document the scene. And once I published, you know, the magazine was published, I just kept going back to the Cobalt, like, well, I'm already here, and, like, my mom has already seen the magazine that, like, there's things to do. And I just spent, like, almost every weekend at the Cobalt. Home base, and I learned photography, like live photography, via the Cobalt, and like shitty lighting and just like on film and all of that. So I guess like my photographs here represent 15 years of music in LA, starting with like my shitty photographs of the Cobalt, which aren't that shitty, all the way up to the most recent will probably be the Fever at the Roxy. But yeah, I started off by lying to security guards. Like, I'm not ashamed of that. Because I was using film, and, like, the new rule was, you know, at first it was no cell phones at venues, and then it became, like, well, cell phones are fine, but, like, no cameras with disposable or, you know, removable lenses. And so, of course, my film camera had a removable lens. And I would say, oh, yeah, it comes off, but, like, it's not digital. It's not a real camera. And they're like, what do you mean? So I'll take the lens off. Like, here's the lens, but, like, you can't see the back of the camera, like, the photos, so it's not really that real. And so they were like, okay, you get a pass. That was multiple shows, like multiple, it was all of 2008 and 9-ish. I was like lying security guards, and I would be against the barricade photographing bands. And one day I saw Lisa Johnson just like on the other end of the barricade, like on the other side. And I was like, hey, how'd you get over there? And she was like, just photograph your friends. And I'm like, my friends play the Cobalt. Like, I don't know how to get from like the Cobalt to, you know, Glass House on the other side. And then I eventually figured out from Flickr that you just reach out to publicists and, you know, have a publication. And so I would reach out with like a copy paste of like what they wrote to publicists. I'm like, hi, my name's Courtney Coles, and I'm a student at Pierce College and whatever. And so people just give 18 or 19 year old access to these artists. And yeah, that's like a long bridge, I guess, to
So I think it's interesting. It's always fun now that we're kind of doing some of this stuff too, as far as reaching out to people, how helpful people generally are when it comes to going to shows and getting access. You know what I mean? It's, I don't think it's the same in the entertainment industry and other areas.
Oh, God, no.
A lot more elitist and difficult, you know, but in this, in our little punk rock world, it seems to be a lot more helping each other out than competition.
Yeah. So I'm like, thank you, older dudes who are like, here, kids, here's what we write for the Rolling Stone, where I'm like, I just want to photograph my favorite bands.
Yeah, that's the fun part of it. Can you talk about some of the hardcore bands you were documenting? I know, yeah, Cobalt, there were a lot of hardcore shows.
Yeah.
And you said you started going to those around 2010?
Like 2009, yeah.
2009, okay. Can you talk about the scene back then and what it was like photographing these bands?
The energy is what kept me going, because I'm this, like, pop-punk emo kid, like, at these, like, hardcore shows. I mean, I love metalcore, but I was like not really that enmeshed in a hardcore scene. And so being like this faceless kind of like little girl in the corner of like, I mean, I can hold my own. So I was very much like, don't mess with the camera. I can't afford to buy another one. So I was like aggressive in like that way. But the scene back then, other than like it being fucking neon as shit, but that was a weird era. Aggressive, but in a loving way, if that makes sense. Like, the bands, of course, some of them don't exist anymore, but, like, that era, it was nice to really learn about older hardcore bands who are, like, playing shows with, like, newer hardcore bands, and they're, like, actually bringing these, about to say students, bringing these, you know, artists on stage with them, fucking, like, 10 bill bands, because, like, you have to fill that shit out to get paid. One band, or a couple bands in particular, No Bragging Rights and The Greenery and like The Messenger, who are hardcore, but like these are the bands I was like, I gotta go see, because their energy was so high, and then also photographing them was just so much, it was difficult because the lighting was so bad because they turned off all the lights, but I pretty much learned how to photograph high energy and terrible lighting with like The Greenery and No Bragging Rights, because they were just, again, high energy bands. And so when I graduated from there to like bigger venues, I was like, oh, the shittier the lights, better. I can do this. Like, the Cobalt Chain Reaction taught me this. And at the same time, I was photographing a lot of pop punk bands, because like hardcore was still hardcoring, but then like pop punk bands were like kind of funneling in, because that was a new era of like pop punk. And so I photographed the Wonder Years, one of their first few shows in LA, not knowing who they were, but like was so stoked, and like the 20 people in the venue who were just like going so hard for this band, I had no idea who they were. And looking at those photos to find these photos for the show, it was like, shit, like, had no idea that even though it was a small, like, crowd, they were going so hard for Soupy. And that kept me going. Like, that kept me wanting to show up. I was not interested in being in, like, the House of Blues or, like, the bigger venues. I really love the intimate, no barricade. I'm in this shit, like, fighting to the front and going, I'm only here for a couple of songs. I'll dip out. It's totally fine. And people, like, pushing me to the stage to get the photos because they could see it on my camera. And then since I was at the Cobalt a lot, they let me stand in, like, the sound area, like, sound area, and have that access of that, you know, being my little safe haven. But I really loved being in the crowd and, like, being in the energy and, like, being a fan first and then, like, whatever else after. So some of the photos, I guess the most, like, crowdy photo will be, like, the Wonder Years of Soupy screaming along with the crowd. That was at their 1-year anniversary of the Upsides in Chain Reaction, or at Chain Reaction, and it was, to this day, the, like, hottest show I've ever been in. The most over, you know, sold out. Like, that's, it should be illegal. It probably is illegal to have that many people in Chain Reaction. And it was so hot that there was condensation, like, sweat, like, dripping on us. Like, just, like, straight up, like, I don't know how, because the walls are filled with fucking t-shirts, so it's like there's like sweat. I'm like this is not my where's this fucking coming from? And at first my friend Tessie and I were sitting like on the edge, like if you haven't been to Chain Reaction, there's like that nice little like edge you can sit on, and then like the rest of the stage we sat like, you know, not on the stage. We're like, we'll just sit here because it's like a nice view. But somehow we're getting pushed further and further onto the stage, and our friend Mitch was like, the photographer still is, but he was okay with us being like in his area. So I was like, okay, we're safe here, but also like I can't see the band. Of course, I was photographing the band just for myself, and the photos were shit because like, we're on stage. It's like so much heat, and just I couldn't see what I'm doing because it's, you know, foggy on my view screen, camera screen, whatever screen. And Soupy went out, you know, in the back, and I guess he threw up because it was so fucking hot. Came back out for this encore. And as I'm just, like, snapping away, I'm, like, hoping I get something. I get home, but the next day I look at my all my photos, and I'm, like, shit, I got, like, the photo that I'm the most proud of. I don't care if anyone else cares about it. I fucking love it. Yeah. And it just encompasses, like, to me, pop punk. To me, just the Wonder Years as fan and all fans, and also just, like, that very hot, very sweaty night. So that's probably my favorite photo on the wall. Only because, like, again, everything on the wall, it comes from me being a fan. Also having access because of whoever I know is, like, letting me have it. But just, like, being in love with music first and wanting photos for myself to put on my own bedroom wall. Yeah, if that helped anything, if that covered anything, but...
Yeah, no, I mean, absolutely. These are amazing.
Thank you.
And, yeah, we're super, super excited to learn about your history and how you got into it. So, yeah, thanks for sharing that. Then let's move over to Naomi Peterson's photos. And so what's right about Naomi is that she was, from what I'm being told, was an official photographer for
SST Records.
SST Records. So that's Greg Ginn's label. And obviously we all know that there's a ton of rad bands that came from that label. We got her brother.
I'm Chris Peterson.
Chris Peterson, who's representing Naomi. Unfortunately, Naomi's not with us anymore, but you know, but we are very excited to at least see some of what she's been able to produce, and we get to live it through her brother. So, can you talk a little bit about her and the history? You know, how she got into photography and then her time at SST.
Yes. Started out in 1980. I took her to her first punk rock show, even though I didn't know what punk rock was. She talked me somehow into going to see The Clash. She was only 15 years old. So I took her to see The Clash. I hung back, way back. She all of a sudden disappeared and ended up in the mosh pit. My little sister, where'd she go? Okay, so she comes back all beaten up and bruised and sweaty. She said, Chris, I had the best night of my life. And she wrote in her journal, this is the night I became a punk rocker. So that was a start. Before that, she liked Boomtown Rat. She liked English kind of gothy bands like Birthday Party and Susie and the Banshees. But after that show, she went back to school in junior high, cut her hair, dyed it dark. We're both half Scandinavian and half Japanese, but she wanted to be all dark and dyed her hair, wore the Dockers and you know, white shirts and a tie, got beat up. All the girls picked on her, threw rocks. This is in Simi Valley, very no minorities in Simi Valley back then. So she went from trying to fit in and be the all-American kind of girl to being just what she wanted to be, a punk rocker. So after that, she started going to shows on her own. And she would sneak her little Instamatic camera into the shows because you're not supposed to bring cameras, right? So she had to hide it and then bring it out and just take a couple quick shots. So her first shows, like the Dead Kennedys and TSOL, were at the Reseda Country Club back in 1982. And they're all kind of blurry and kind of distant a little bit, but she was starting to enjoy doing that. And then all of a sudden, her uncle from Japan, who's a Buddhist priest, gave her his Nikon camera. So all of a sudden, she had this really hard-duty F2 Nikon camera she could take to shows and get in the mosh pit, and that became her battering ram. She would actually hit people with it who were trying to run into her, and she'd hurry up and bring it up and take a quick picture and then use that. You know, she had to fight off these guys all the time. So she would go home, develop the photos in her darkroom, bring it back to the show, and show the bands these photos that she took of them. And one of the first people that noticed her was Robo from Black Flag. He says, "Oh, you're really talented. You know, I want to get you into our shows." So from then on, she went from the mosh pit to the side of the stage where she felt safer. You know, she's a little bit shy and reserved, so her camera was kind of like her way to speak for herself. So she could get up there and take pictures, and everyone noticed her. And then one night she came home real late, and my dad locked her out of the house. She had nowhere to go. She ended up going back to SST, like 2 in the morning, crying and sobbing. She cut her arms a little bit, pretending to, you know, wanting to kill herself. And they took her in. And from that point forward, she became the SST house photographer because they already knew about her photography skills. Plus, she loved the music, most of all. That's the main thing about my sister. She loved punk rock music. It was original. It was heartfelt. And that's how she wanted to be, too. So ever since, from 1982 to 1989, she took all the photos of Black Flag, Minutemen, Husker Du, Saccharine Trust, Meat Puppets, all those bands, and even later on, Screaming Trees and Bad Brains. Believe it or not, they were an SST band for a while, Sonic Youth, and Soundgarden. So she was the house photographer and became pretty well known for that. After that, she left and went to Discord Records in 1989, so she knew all those guys from Discord and also worked at the 930 Club. So up here you can see photographs that span from 1982 when she first met Henry Rollins, who is a great friend of his, and photograph Minor Threat, where they're picking on Robo. You got to see this photo, everyone. It's a Minor Threat shoot. And Henry jumps in. If you all seen Ian flipping off Henry behind his back, that's the same photo shoot. But in this shot, I brought this one because they're picking on poor Robo, she wrote on the back. Poor Robo, he ran away after this. No. They were teasing him for some reason. And he ran away. But that just shows you she was accepted into this group. You know, being a female, being beautiful didn't hurt, but she still stood her ground. She didn't flirt. She just wanted to be professional. But she wanted to let them know that she was there for the music. So they admired that about her. So everyone wrote how much they loved her, being around her. She was easy to talk to. When she was doing photo shoots, she didn't try to pose people. She just let them be. And we said that's why we wanted her. We wanted just to be natural and be ourselves, and she brought that out in us. So, yeah, all the photographs of Black Flag are mostly hers. And even Scream was an early DC punk band. She knew all these guys. When they came to the West Coast, she would photograph them. And they had a new drummer named Dave Grohl. Yeah. He's only 17. And so she took all these shots. She loved Scream, of all these shots of Dave Grohl and his band. I don't mean it to say it like that, but nobody else knew who he was. So I have maybe 1,000 photos of Dave Grohl, which is great because now I can license, you know, photos to him. And I'm the go-to guy for that. But that's just good because it proves that she didn't shoot them because they're famous or anything else. She loved the music and she loved the guys, you know, that created it. And she photographed them all the time at shows. And sure enough, you know, it's a part of history. So I included this one because Dave Grohl, and then there's Kurt Cobain above him. This is 1990. My sister worked at the 930 Club in Washington, D.C. She was a bookkeeper. she would run downstairs when she knew the band was coming, and she said, "Kurt, let's go out to the street and take some shots." So that's him standing, looking off in the distance, 1990, before they were famous, really. So I have early Kurt Cobain, and this shot became a poster with Shepherd Fairey, Obey Giant. He turned that into a beautiful art piece. So just showing that from 1982 to 1990, even NoFX, Mike, that Mike there, and Melvin, he said that was the first time that's a live show, but they that anyone took promo shots of them as a group just standing outside and hanging out. I have early photos of them in 1990 also. And then Fugazi, Sonic Youth, which Fat Mike says is not punk rock. And I won't tell Thurston that because he wants to be a punk rocker. He's told me that. But I'm just honored to be here and a part of it. I'm doing this for Naomi and her legacy and for history and for female photographers. So I've learned about punk rock. I used to be Aerosmith and Van Halen and Led Zeppelin. I still love them, but I'm all punk now. This is my punk life journey.
What I love that all three of you have in common is that you're able to pick up on and capture a moment in time that you didn't necessarily know was going to be iconic later on, but you knew it was special at the time, special enough to stick around and get in there with the not your sweat and get in there with all the elbows and all that stuff and document it. You know, it was important to you, and now it's become important to an entire generation. So, yeah.
Yeah, there's always an element of danger too, right? I mean, all of you have been put in danger, even you, right?
Yeah.
I break up to the shows, but yeah.
I'm always in the front and I break up the fights now.
Yeah.
Don't fight, it's just a punk show. They all
you know, and it's almost like you're in there for the energy, and that's rad. So, I'm a little curious. We can start with OG. What do you shoot with?
I shoot with a Canon R5, and it's a 35mm lens. It was just standard at the time. It was all I can afford, and I'm still financing it. When I first started shooting the shows, I was using a Nikon D80 that was like hand-me-down, and it's like way out of date. And so I walked into Sammy's camera, and I was like, I need something that works with like no light. Like I'm in alleys, and I don't have any light. I need something that's going to help me shoot without a flash. And so guy upselled me, and he's like, "You don't want a Mark V." He's like, "You want a Canon R5." So it's a mirrorless camera. I still shoot it like it's a film camera. So everything is pretty much manual unless I set the ISO to auto because of how much lighting changes with every angle. But it's light, and it's perfect for the pit, you know. I'm a very much like a crouch in random places. Like I'll find a good spot that I have to be close enough but wide enough away from them because of my lens. I'm not shooting with like a zoom lens. That's just crazy to me if you can see where I'm standing. These are very like brief moments other than the portraits. Or like I'm trying to not be in the way, and I don't like being in the way. Like I'm very respectful to the bands. Like I don't like flashing a light in their face. I almost don't want them to see that I'm there, to be honest, when I'm in like closed places. But the outdoor shows, as you can see, like all the photographers and just how crazy and like in that Sixth Street Bridge shot, you can see probably like 10 guys holding cameras. Yeah, so it's kind of intimidating. It was for me at first, but I realized that the 35mm Canon R5 was like perfect for me. It gives me a chance to be as personal, but not too up close, you know?
So. Awesome. Yeah, that's rad. Yeah, and you got it dialed in, so it's like your baby, right?
It is. And hardcore shows are interesting because there's a lot of kicking. And a lot of karate chopping, and you got a lot of stage diving, and I want to be in the middle of all of it, right? But at the same time, like, you have to consider getting hurt and not wanting to get hurt, but I don't really think about those things when I'm in the moment. I just bear with it, and as you can see, like, my hair's caught on fire, you know? But, yeah.
That's rad. And how about you, Courtney? What do you shoot with?
So my very first camera that I bought myself with like my own money was a Canon Rebel K2, which is a 35mm little Canon camera. And I was so stoked. I'm like, hell yeah, I'm going to learn photography the real way on this thing. And so my first year or two with the music was I was making photographs on 35mm Canon camera. Pierce College had gotten rid of their darkroom the semester before I started, so no darkroom access. And I was like, what's the point of being in college if I can't use a darkroom? And so they had a whole fridge filled with film. And so I was able to, like, use film for free for 3 years, like, learn how to, you know, make photographs. And eventually it became too expensive for me to, like, sustain photographing all these shows. And I bought a 20D off of, like, a former friend. And I was like, yeah, my first digital camera was so out of date. And so a lot of my photographs of the Cobalt, you know, from 2010 to, I don't know, 12 or 13, 20D. And I kept using just, like, hand-me-down cameras from friends until eventually I bought my first actual not pre-owned camera. It was a Mark IV Canon, and I still use it. So I also don't like being, like, far from people, but I also want to be in it. So my secret is I just... I'm invisible. Like, you can tell I'm there because you can smell my perfume, but, like, other than that, like, you don't see me. I pop in, pop out, here it is. And I still use the Rebel to this day. Like, I have digital camera, I have my film camera, I use the contacts as well, because, like, why not? But anything to, like, get it done. Like, I'm not really a gearhead. It's like whatever I have on me that I can take to the show, sick. So yeah.
That's rad, yeah. I like how you say your stealth, you know, in and out. So that's cool that you're able to navigate. And I think over years, it just becomes second nature, right, to get in and out like a, you know.
You have to. There's so much going on. Like, I could turn left, I can turn right, and it's like there's flames going this way, there's fireworks going this way, or, like, there's a fight going this way. It's just, yeah, you have to. You have to be stealth.
Yeah, that's rad. And then how about with Naomi? Do you know what she was using?
I'm not too familiar, but I do know she had a Nikon F2, which is a very heavy camera. It weighs about, I still have it, it weighs about 6 pounds. It was heavy, plus the lens on top of that. Plus she had an extra camera, I believe it was a Canon, I can't tell you the model number, that was a color. So she would shoot one camera with color and one with black and white, just going back and forth, back and forth. But what I can speak to is I remember those days we had rolls of film you had to buy, you know, and it was expensive. One roll, I believe, was like $5-6. And you only had 24 shots or 36 shots. And my sister's working in a restaurant making, what, $2.85 an hour. So to buy a roll of film to her was a big deal. So she only about had maybe two rolls of film. She had to count the shots in her head. Okay, how many do I have left? I just shot 3 shots of the opening band. Who are they? Well, maybe they're the mentors or... you know, youth brigade. So maybe, which I wish she would shop more, but she was saving it for the bigger band that in her eyes were bigger. And so she always had to measure herself. How many shots do I have? Uh-oh, I just got knocked over and I wasted that shot. One's in the ceiling or blurry, a lot of blurry shots because she's indoors. It's really dark, like you said. And so when someone's moving on stage and she has to open up her aperture to, you know, slow it down, it's going to be blurry. So it was really hard for her to get a good shot, so she really had to be patient and wait and time it just right. So that I can speak of just by archiving 40,000 photos and seeing a lot of them sadly wasted or, you know, I couldn't use them. But I've seen each of them, and I admire what she did and the work that she put into it and the passion.
Yeah, so we admire that a lot. I only have one more question in regards to your cameras. Did you guys, do you have a backup plan in case someone knocks that camera out of your hand, somebody's karate kicking too much or whatever's going down? Do you guys have a plan B for that show or?
No.
Nope, that's it, huh? So you guard that thing with your lives.
Honestly, like, I've been very lucky, but there's just a sort of instinct that you have because, I mean, I like to shoot from the perspective of someone that's there and in it. Sometimes I set my camera aside and I'm in the pit or I'm like, you know, I'm fucking shit up too, you know, because it's just part of, like, I've been doing that since I was like 15 years old. So to me, it's like I'd be at these shows whether I had a camera or not. It's just kind of bulky thing that you're carrying around. But I kind of like to just hold it. And if I see something I like I shoot it, you know, and then I'm trying to be as present as possible. But at the same time, like, I want to cover as much as I can. So it's the risk that you take, man. Like, I just hope, I don't even carry a flash with me, to be honest, because if a kid knocks the top of that flash off and can rip, like, it will happen. So I don't even bother shooting with the flash as much.
Right on, right on. Well, you know what? We really, truly appreciate talking to all three of you. this is very insightful. We're like I said, we're super stoked to look at your photography and the work you've done is amazing. With that said, keep an eye out for the Punk Rock Chronicles. You know, follow us. We will be having this out there in all the streaming services carry us, and then obviously our YouTube channel, Facebook, and all that fun Instagram. Thank you for coming out.
Thank you. Thanks for
Come visit the Punk Rock Museum. Check out the photography. Check out the museum. Support.
Yeah, happy birthday, Punk Rock Museum.
Happy birthday.
Yes.
All right. This is Stan Mueller with the Punk Rock Chronicles. This is our second segment at the Punk Rock Museum, 1 year anniversary, and we are with Bob the Bastard.
Hey,
and we've got two more really cool photographers, female photographers. We've got Jennifer Finch from L7, who's rad. In L7, and then and is a rad photographer, and then we have Marla Watson, our dear friend.
Hello.
And Marla Watson is actually in the. Marla Watson is in the actual show that's going on here. So it's a like we mentioned earlier in our previous show, it is the exhibit of female photographers from various different eras, and it highlights different It's really
Marla
amazing.
And I represent the 1930s. Yes. Oh.
So they go back to the 20s.
Developing film with steam.
When were you guys approached to kind of put this thing together, and like what led to this exhibit specifically?
Lisa Johnson approached me maybe 2 months ago, said she was putting the show together, asked me if I'd participate.
Of course.
Any excuse to come back here. So that was it. I had no idea what photo she picked until she sent the release.
Nice.
So it was, we sent all of us, sent her a bunch of photos, and she picked. So
who does your printing in L.A.? Who does your printing?
I don't print in L.A. I live in Oregon.
Who does your printing in Oregon?
There's a Gango Press.
Gango Press. Not good to know. That's a thing now, because there's only maybe one place left in San Francisco, a couple in Oregon, and a couple in California.
It's a dying industry, right?
Yeah. Unless you go to Staples, like I do, and just print it out on some crap and tell people it's fancy.
Well, if it looks fancy, then, you know, you get away with it,
no,
I guess.
Ultimately, it is fancy.
Yeah, there you go. And I'm sorry to interrupt, but you guys have both been into photography since you were very young, right? Like 12, 13 in your case. Mm-hmm. And when did you start?
Around 18.
Around 18. So still in your teens for sure. When did it become a serious thing for you guys?
To be honest, I don't think it was. I did this.
Uh-huh.
And through the 80s, then I left and had a child. And the photography world was just something I did. One of my many incarnations. So. Hmm.
And with you were doing photography before you were doing music, I assume, then.
I was. I just wanted to know how to get backstage to the beer, and photography made sense. It was a good trade-off. I have prints for you to see the cramps or the suicidals. Can I go backstage and show them to you? And
you're
drink your
there.
Beer?
Yeah, you're there early on, late 70s, right? Punk scene?
I love that you think I read that old. I super do. I went to my first show in the 70s, but like with a babysitter. I saw the Ramones at Ackerman Ballroom, did not photograph it. Wow. But I started to realize quickly that I needed an excuse to go to shows, and I wanted to start going to shows in 81. So the Cramps were playing in LA, and I convinced the adults in my life that if I went there to photograph, I'd be there for a good reason.
Nice, nice. So how did you even get the camera? I mean, you thought of the idea, but how did you acquire the camera?
Anybody in the neighborhood's dad usually had gotten a camera to do family photos, and you just had to ask the right people to go through the right closets or be going through the right closets to find the stored camera, usually a Pentax.
Probably a decent camera then, right? If you're taking it from Papa.
Back then, though, they were considered like consumer level, family cameras.
Yeah, the K1000, basic.
Mm-hmm. That's rad, and that's all you needed. So what, you said the Cramps was your first show that you photographed?
That I photographed, yeah.
Can you talk about just that era then? Because 81 is a pretty hardcore time. Can you talk about some of the other bands that you would come across and photograph?
Sure. Between 81 and 83, actually, Marla both did quite a few of the same shows together that included Bad Religion, Suicidal, Damned played in Los Angeles. There was a club that came up called Godzilla's that was a very important club that I photographed at, like a regular venue, the Vex, and then every once in a while, the Whiskey, the Starwood. I couldn't get into the Starwood. Could you get into the Starwood? I was too young.
I was old enough, but I didn't go.
But you didn't go, okay. Yeah, it was definitely a time when there was punk rock in the 70s and the late 70s, and everyone was growing up and going to college and doing other stuff, and it kind of let this, I'm part of a suburban insurgence into Hollywood that brought violence and drugs and stuff that is kind of what the 80s ended up being, the mid-80s to late 80s ended up being known for.
Did you have a favorite venue that you like to go and shoot at? Like a home base?
I didn't care. Yeah, no, I'm not. Matter. I ain't like that. Mm. I ain't like that. I wing it. I go on intuition. I just would do it.
You go where the bands are.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, they were kind of fly by night. So did you develop your own film, or how did you handle that?
Yeah, we all did back then.
How did you learn that at school? Was it like a photography class or...
I don't know. I just found photographers and asked them to help. Like Allison was very actually mentored a lot of younger photographers in the scene back then. Allison Braun, who's in the show, and I hope you spoke to. Yeah.
Oh yeah, we love Allison. Okay. Yeah. We have a cool skateboard deck with Allison Braun. We did with a Shattered Faith.
Nice
photo at the Olympic. Mm-hmm. And we did a little collaboration.
Right here.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And she's been on our podcast too numerous times. I think three or four times.
Yeah, she's rad.
Yeah, she's great. She's wonderful.
She's like an example of someone for me who was very serious into it. Like she knew exactly what she was doing. She made notes about her film. She was very diligent in her style. She really thought about composition and light.
Can I say something about Allison?
You what?
Can I say something about Allison?
Of course, yes.
So I was here. We were here. She was here last night, and we were talking. And I've known Allison since. She was one of my sister's friends, so she's about 4 years younger than me. So I've known her since middle school. But Allison has shot. She's been in the precipice of the hardcore LA hardcore scene. She was like 14. She was a kid. She went with her dad.
The mouse, right?
She was on the precipice of that. Then she shot the metal scene in that those hair days. But then she moved to Seattle, and unbeknownst to her, she didn't go. This grunge scene happened, and so this woman, who doesn't get enough credit at all, this woman should be more renowned than she is, because I think Allison is it's amazing that she stuck with it, and she shot so many scenes as they emerged.
Right.
And I think that to be that kind of a photographer, it's not ever what I was going to do. Mm-hmm. But she still shoots. It's like,
right.
And she took it very seriously. She worked at Studio City Camera Exchange. Like, she took it very seriously. And not that we didn't take it seriously, but really getting on stage and taking photos and getting in for free, that was part of the lure, you know. Like,
right.
Anyway.
You know, I agree. The one thing that I love about this current era of just artistry, whether it be photography, music, whatever, is that, and I don't know what kickstarted it, maybe it's the pandemic or whatever, we almost lost a lot of freedoms, but it's coming around to where all of you artists are getting a little more due of a little more recognition now than you did in the previous decade, two decades, and I feel like it's coming around and you're finally getting what you guys deserve, because what you've done is create a foundation for the next generation of photographers, the people we just talked to. You know, you guys are an inspiration to them as well as to us. I mean, I've sat and looked through 100,000 magazines with, photos and snapshots and show reviews, everything. All this stuff is because of you guys. So I agree with you. You deserve a lot more credit than you're getting, and it's good to see the recognition finally coming back around,
So, Jennifer, really quick, what kind of publications has your photos been in?
I resisted publication. I mean, I'm part of a generation of women that felt the performance and the moment was more important than the product produced, so therefore we're very undocumented. But I have been in Flipside, and I have been in Maximum Rock and Roll, and a couple things have leaked through.
And in general, back then, you have all the inspiration from Alison Braun and some other photographers. What other photographers in general did you see at the show a lot?
Ed Culver. Glenn Friedman.
Yeah.
Yeah, both who were Naomi also Peterson. Very generous with information and in strategies.
Yeah, yeah.
There are times when I was very young, when I was 14, shooting a Christian Death at the Whiskey, which is one of his sort of more like a body of work that he shows. I'm actually standing in front of him photographing at the same time. He's quite tall, and I'm still 5'1". And it's almost like we have these identical angles, but his are so crisp and pristine and so about the moment. And you can really see the difference between starting out, discovering vision, and someone who absolutely knows what they're looking at. He's also a visual artist as well. He paints and he's done a lot of other stuff. So you can clearly see that composition in his work.
Yeah, he's definitely artistic. It's amazing. So, Marla.
Yeah?
When you were kind of coming up, I know we've talked previously on other podcasts. Can you talk about some of the more dangerous type shows that you were at?
Well, it got dangerous for me when it got towards the Olympic Auditorium, like 84, when there were more people on the stage than there were in the pit. Then that became dangerous, as I got hurt. All those people up on the stage and going crazy. You couldn't even see the bands. Right. And so at that point, that was where I was like, this is getting a little dangerous. I had dangerous, we went to dangerous places because no one, they stopped booking us in safe places. So you would end up going farther and farther out to more dangerous neighborhoods.
Right.
But the danger for me was really when the hardcore scene got very violent. And then that's where I bowed out of that scene and went on to do other stuff.
Yeah, a lot of people gravitated towards other types of music and artistic expression at that point. Jennifer, what about you? Did you?
I thrive on danger.
Yeah, right on. So what about...
I eat it for lunch.
I had a sandwich. I think what I want to know with you is I like the idea that because you're so passionate about photography, you had access to moments while you were touring that a lot of other photographers don't really have because they're, you know, relegated to the press pit or the front stage. Did you find yourself in some really interesting, introspective type moments on tour where you're able to kind of photograph and document?
Absolutely. But you know, my specialty was never on stage photography. I felt like be able to have access to moments of fans, of people experiencing it are much more deeply connected with than the actual performers themselves. Right? And the unfortunate part is, yes, I have all these photographs of Red Hot Chili Peppers and early Nirvana and all the way back to Gun Club and Alice Bag, or Castration Squad. Like, I have all this body of work, but my passion is usually, like, the 4 hours before the show and the 4 hours after the show of going out, doing drugs, being in parking lots, of the kids that went to the shows.
That's great. Do you have any plans to... make something of that as far as a coffee table book, anything? Those are just for your own.
I don't believe in books.
Yeah, okay.
In general?
Nope.
Or just don't believe in them. Yeah. Not a book, not a word.
I do fanzines once in a while, and if anyone gets on my mailing list, I'll do like inexpensive sort of explorations with my fans. I'll talk, not fans, but you know, in the community, like what are you interested in? What stories? What are your stories? What are your reflections? And I do like sort of, you know, maybe 10 image. Quickly done at Staples, fanzine releases. It usually like limited to 55 copies.
So you're more about
like doing.
You're into the interactions.
I'm not into the book and the bleh.
Yeah.
I don't like doing albums either or recording music. I love the moment and being in community with other people and all this other stuff around it.
Yeah.
Keep confused. I live in like a white box where there's no items in it. Like I just can't. I don't like stuff.
Well, fair enough. I mean, I like how you two are contrasting in that way.
Absolutely.
You know, and there's room for all of it because if it weren't for those books, I would have been missing out on quite a lot of really cool
things. Well, you would have figured it out and you would have invented your own thing and you wouldn't have to be in the wake of like anyone older's rush to archive. You would have been able to create. We don't know, right?
Yeah, that's an interesting perspective
but
for sure.
I sit down and I love books.
Yeah.
You know, I do. I just don't see myself pulling together a book.
You know, what's rad is with both of your styles of presenting your work, it's total DIY. You know what I mean? So you're saying that you're putting this together, you're going to Staples, you're doing a short run, which is awesome. You know what I mean? And then Marla her book's really impressive.
Yeah, it's great.
And she did that all
herself.
Yeah, and it's awesome that you were able to do that on your own. You know what I mean?
I'm all DIY.
All DIY. That's how we do it, too. Everything's
DIY.
That's
the punk rock way. Like, you have to do it DIY. If you get someone else involved that wasn't in the scene, or they're like, well, I don't like the aesthetic of that. No. It has to be what I see. Like, if it's my book or my photo.
Your presentation.
It's my presentation. Exactly. Like, and so when I did the book, I knew nothing about graphic design. Nothing, nada. I still can't use Photoshop. Like, I don't know anything about any of that stuff. But I did figure out how to do a book with that little information I had. And I watched YouTube videos and figured out stuff. And then I looked at other people's books and I said, what do I like and what don't I like? And then I used, you know, what I liked. And I just had to be aesthetically pleasing to me. That's it. I just was my own, like, I was the judge. No one else had to. And I thought when I published that book, no one's going to look at it. No one's going to buy it because no one knows who I am. You know, I wasn't just some person who took photos 40-something years ago. Mm-hmm. Left them in an attic and in a box. And so I was surprised. I'm surprised. Genuinely surprised at the reaction to my book, because
that's so cool. I mean, I love the idea that you took something, created something, and you're getting all that love for the work that you all the time, because it's not easy to put that together. You know, we do everything DIY. You know, we're filming documentaries, we're doing a podcast, we're doing all kinds of things. And Chris, our producer, you know, he's learning as he's going, you know, and we're trying to figure this stuff out. And for you to actually be able to accomplish a piece of work and release it and get all the recognition that you've been getting is truly inspirational. I think for any photographer or any artist that's out there, so good on that.
Thank you.
Yeah, and I love the authenticity of it and the pure love of it, the joy of what you did, comes through in the quality of the book. Oh. It doesn't have any kind of a thrown together look or feel to it. It's very quality, you know. The photos you chose, the arrangement of the photos, it was all, you could tell it was a painstaking detail, you know, for you to go through all that and put it together the way that you saw it in your vision. And it came through really well, you know what I mean?
Well, thank
you. So it's cool to see the love of it come through.
Because none of those photos were scanned high res. They were all scanned with my little Wolverine scanner. And then I had to actually convert everything to 300 DPI. Mm-hmm. And, like, because that's all I knew how to do. And so that's what I did. And like Jennifer, I did not give my stuff to magazines or, you know, Maximum Rock and Roll and a couple of records. But I didn't do any of that stuff. I felt like these were mine. And they were my babies. Mm. And I kept them with me. I always had a book in my head. I thought, everyone should do a book. But it took me a lot. It took a lot. And I don't know if it was just like low self-esteem or if it was just they were so personal to me. Because every negative, is a memory,
yeah,
of a time that I really loved. And so, and I look back sometimes and I see things and I, sometimes they spark memories and, you know, that's, I loved being in the punk scene. And that's what I tried to express in the book, is how much I liked it, mm-hmm, and other people that wrote the stories in the book. And what it meant to them, because it meant a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, it comes through. It comes through, and definitely both of you seem to have. I love that you have a differing idea of how you want to present your art or how much of it you want to present, mm-hmm, but the love's genuine. So what I'm curious about now is you've had your book out, and you're still active in photography. What are you guys working on now, or do you have a plan? I know you're a live in the moment type of girl, so I get that, but
yeah, I mean, the kind of work the work that I do now is beyond anything representational. It's definitely conceptual. It's definitely talking about living in a meta-modern world of,
right,
you know, falling apartness.
Do you find that it's easier to keep yourself boxed out of all this this you know, this active world and kind of stick in your own bubble? Does that keep you creative?
It's interesting because I definitely, like, as a person who's had some years, I think about my work in bodies of work, and I think about it in community and community storytelling. So I kind of dive into themes right now. Like, I'm doing a theme, it's kind of heavy, called Suicide Sites, and it's people who have survived suicide 10 years or more and go and do kind of surreal representations of their memories of a specific location. So I'm really about, like, Los Angeles is a specific location. Los Angeles is a character in itself in our story. So I do a lot of kind of work with that. But it's all about meeting with people and talking to them about what their visual representation or aesthetic is and working in community to pull that together. So it's something very different than what I'd ever been doing before.
That
like,
sounds
oh,
pretty
hey,
intense.
That's cool shit. Take a photo, you know?
Right, right.
Yeah, it's way more thought out, it sounds like.
More methodical.
Mm-hmm. How do we even, like, see this? I mean, how is it, where is it located? I mean, that sounds really interesting. I would love to see that.
Yeah, I'm still working on a couple of pieces. I'm also working on a series called Bloodbath, which is photographing traumatized women in a bathtub from above and below. And I need to raise money for that. Like, I set out to go do it and ended up not being able to necessarily fund it.
So are your followers able to donate, or is there a place where people go and sort of see what you're putting out there?
Yeah, it's such a great question. You know, I've never been a commercial photographer.
Right.
Like, I don't know what that mechanism is. Mm. So I need to maybe figure out what it means to say I'm doing this work, but they're going to expect me to show it, which I think for Marla's talking about, these were photographs of memories of a moment that she engaged with that were highly important. My resistance in showing it was that it would be judged on a commercial level when I wasn't being a commercial photographer. Right. The people go like, oh, your lighting is off or your something is off. And I have like actually kind of a story that's kind of an adult story. But when I was shooting, I would shoot kids, people that were under 18, and I would go to adults to say, hey, how's my lighting? How's my exposure? What am I doing? And they just look at the photos and know they shouldn't be looking at them because there was some nudity, because there was like risky behavior. Mm-hmm. And it was like, I always thought people hated my photography. Mm-hmm. I thought I sucked. You know what I mean? And really, I look back and I'm like, I didn't suck as a photographer. It's clearly just this, the topicking of looking at kids that made me unable to seek mentorship in photography.
It sounds like a general, you like to present challenging artistic works that are going to make people maybe not necessarily feel comfortable when they see them.
Sure. This pussy's gangsta.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. Don't you have that tattoo?
Yeah, exactly. Well, hey, you know what? We really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us today. And, you know, celebrating the punk rock museum, you know, and we get to hang out and chat and check out all this cool photography here and art and all that. So we're stoked to be a part of this this 1 year anniversary. And, yeah, thanks for coming out.
Great. Thank you for having us.
We appreciate it. Thank you.
Oh, these are all a bunch of.
Guess what? I wasn't recording that.
That's okay.
Time.
Good. It wasn't.
All right. So we're here at the Punk Rock Museum with the Punk Rock Chronicles, take two. I just filmed like 10 minutes of these guys talking and noticed that I wasn't recording. I just got this thing and it's new, so bear with me. Stan, anything to say?
Yes, so we were able to come out here for the anniversary of the Punk Rock Museum. Not only that, we got to do some podcasting. We interviewed some amazing photographers from different eras of punk rock, old school, new school, which was really cool. Good introspective look at just underground photography. We also got to interview Jennifer Finch from L7, who's an amazing photographer, old school photographer. And yeah, it's been a good time so far. Now we've seen some cool bands. We've got to wander around the museum a little bit. And now we're going to be checking out the Vandals. And so Bob the Bastard, what's your favorite part so far?
I've been walking around here like a kid in a candy store. It's unreal. We got to see The Last Gang. They played just a few minutes ago and they killed it. Everywhere I turn, there's a piece of history. Some of it from other scenes and other states and other times. Some of it from an era in Orange County where I'm from. So I got a reminder of what it was like to be back in that scene. So just, I don't know. I'm meeting all these cool people. We're all here for the same reason. It's just a blast, man. What else could you ask for? Maybe a beer. I could use a beer.
Yeah, give him a beer.
That's the hard part, is getting the beer, because the line is so long.
There's a long line for, and there's a lot of drinkers.
I'm here now. It's super producer. What do you call me? Super producer Chris? We are standing here in the punk rock and paintbrushes. Punk rock and paintbrushes exhibit with all the cool art from like Warren Fitzgerald. You'll see. We covered this before, but these pictures are very phallic-y. Cool. His pictures are always fun. I'm in the tattoo parlor, so.
Hey, bro.
If you look behind me, there's people ordering tattoos in real time. They're gonna get tatted. Descend down into the triple down bar downstairs. So,
that'd be great.
Stay tuned.
Hello, how are you?
Yes. Best fucking Easter ever. Best Easter ever. Best Easter. Buddy oh, Ryan. Man, love the Easter.
Oh, God. I hate the guitar.
All right, I know, everything sounds really good, doesn't it?
You thought I was good at singing.
Yeah, okay, you're here. Let me sing, I'm going to sing. In honor of all the young punk people coming up. Yes.
Coming on up.
And all that, you know, sooner or later, you're going to have to fall in love and have more punk babies, okay? Fill the world with punk babies, okay?
Yay, punk babies.
Punk babies! All right, that's right. Because the Easter Bunny means it's about fertility. All right, so... This song is called, it's about young love, it's called I Have a Date. Yay! I am